From the beginning of time, all we have ever wanted is to love and be loved. And from the beginning of time, all we have ever done is set up social constructions, religious regulations, tribal taboos, societal restrictions, governmental laws, and cultural ethics, telling us who, where, what, how, and why we may love, and who, where, what, how, and why we may not. And unfortunately, the second list is longer than the first. Now, we will have turned things around in our world when we decide to make the first list longer than the second. In fact, we will have really changed our world when we decide to eliminate the second list altogether. That there is no reason not to love someone and no way in which we ought not love them if the love is pure and true. Love, of course, does not damage another, and so that would not be love if another is damaged by our love. But it has been so difficult for our society to accept that who, where, what, how, and why we may not love is the list we must eliminate. We want to be able to say, you may not love that person in that way. You may not do that. They're too young, or they're too old, or they're the wrong color, or they're the wrong gender. It would be okay if we just made these references lightly and didn't really impose our will with regard to them. They were maybe just personal preferences, but no, we seek to impose our will. You don't understand, Neil. It is morally wrong to love a person of the same gender in that way. Neil, you don't understand. It's morally wrong. It's morally repugnant to love a person of a different race. There was a time in this country when, of course, that was considered to be true. That was what we called right. And it was considered wrong to marry interracially. In fact, in some tribal clans, in some family groupings, in some societies and neighborhoods, even today, in some religious communities, even today, marrying outside the community is absolutely considered wrong. What possible cultural imperative could require such a response? And what human being could not see it as insane, given where we say we want to go, to a place of greater love and greater harmony? These are the questions we must face as a society, as a family, as an individual, if we are to heal the rift which tears us apart. Yes.
Love is confusing to me because I never had love that I, you know, family love like mom and dad love.
I can assist you in unconfusing love. Here's how you can unconfuse love in 20 minutes or less. Love is only confusing to you when your experience of love is that which is coming at you or not, as the case may be. Love will never be confusing to you when you are considering that which you are sending out to others. Therefore, if you want to unconfuse love in 20 minutes or less, decide how it is you want to send your love to others and send it that way, immediately and to everyone whose life you touch. And you will be very unconfused about love. Then you will reach a new conclusion. Not that love is confusing to me, for I am not confused anymore about what love is, or what it looks like, or how it's experienced, or any of that. But they might be. And so you will come to a new conclusion. Oh, I see. I'm not confused about love. And in fact, I never was. But my mom was. But my dad was. But my wife was, or whoever. And then, when you go there, the question becomes a different one. Not, what is this confusing thing called love? because you'd be clear about that. Then the question becomes, can I forgive that other for being confused about what love is? And yet, even in all of their confusion, those others somehow managed, by hook or by crook, somehow or another, I still managed to find a place of clarity about what love is for me. And so I see the gift, and I give it. I see the gift, and I give it. Rule of life number 9. A gift is not a gift until it's given as well as received. I submit to you that there is not really a person in this room who is truly confused in the deepest place of their heart about what love is. They're only confused about why other people don't agree with them. Did you hear what I just said? They're only confused about why the rest of the world doesn't share their clarity. And the rest of the world won't share your clarity until you do. The rest of the world won't share your clarity until you share your clarity with the rest of the world.
But I still have that void inside. Deep down inside, I feel like I'm missing it. You know, and that might be where I haven't forgiven. You know, forgiven myself, forgiven my parents.
How does it serve you to experience a void inside, created by the love that wasn't given?
Just holds on to a lot of pain.
How does it serve you to hold on to a lot of pain? How does that serve you?
Justify some anger.
Thank you for seeing that. Mm-hmm. How does it serve you to justify some anger?
To stay out of love.
How does it serve you to stay out of love?
Keeps me separate. Keeps me safe.
Of course. Mm-hmm. And so you hold on to the experience of the void rather than just letting it go in order to remain safe. And you will forever remain unsafe so long as you believe and experience that your safety is created in the experience of receiving the love of others. Yet when you decide that your ultimate safety is experienced and created in the giving of your love to others, whether they return it or not, then you will find a safety that will never leave and never change. And the irony of that is that when you find that safety, you will receive all the love that you had wanted to receive when you thought your safety was in the receiving of it. And so we have to break the vicious cycle to create a blessed circle. Do you see? We're discussing love and your truth about love and your functional reality and what's really so.
I think that for many of us, myself included, I define love in such a way that it can be experienced only through intimate relationships with other human beings, a spouse, a friend, or parents or children, when love at its purest form is exactly the same. The experience that you can have on a beautiful beach or at the top of a mountain or when you're out for a good run, how does that feeling of pure love differ from making love to a partner?
When it differs, in the instance when it differs in one's perception. And the perception is that in some instances there's something we want to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And in other instances there's not.
Yeah.
When you're standing on a mountaintop and the sunrise occurs and you're filled with love for all of creation, and many of us have had those moments, there's nothing we want to get out of it. We're just observing it, noticing it, celebrating the glory of it. But when we're making love with another human being on that same beach or mountaintop, there frequently creeps into the experience the illusion that there's something I need to get out of this now, and if I don't get this out of this now, then I won't feel loved. You may not be able to find love everywhere, but you may place love everywhere.
Yeah.
And you will find love where you place it. Yes, please, go ahead.
I think the one thing that I struggle with right now is having to deal with...
Keep breathing.
Having to deal with a father who was more interested in me respecting him than loving him. And my father died 4 years ago. And he died of lung cancer. And the last 3 months of his life was the only time that he really let me get close and actually allowed me to show him that love. He was afraid to take off his mask and to be who he really was. And so he lived his life as if his job was to put food on the table and to put clothes on my back and a roof over my head. And the loving part of it was not something that he had to deal with. And he didn't view as love was something that was of concern to him.
Let me ask you a question just for the sake of clarity. Is there a part of you that can see or would believe that, limited as an expression though it might be, the putting of the food on the table and the clothes on your back and the roof over your head was his way of showing his love for you?
Yeah, I understand that.
Do you not only understand it intellectually, but receive it emotionally as how he showed you his love? Could you agree with me that there may have been days, months, perhaps even years, when he got up and went to work and provided those things for you when he didn't feel necessarily like doing it, but did it, although he may not have articulated it this way, out of love for you?
Yes.
Is there a part of you that could see that?
Oh, I understand that, yes.
Now, is there a part of you that can equally understand why it was difficult for your father to demonstrate or reveal his love to you or to show it in the ways that you would have liked him to?
Yes. Yeah, I understand. His father was the same way. His father was a person who was on the road, wasn't there for him. His mother basically raised him, but his father provided for him.
Do you think you might ever one day love another person?
Yes.
Do you think you would show your love for another person in the somewhat limited way that your father showed his love to you?
Never.
What then has your father taught you?
Quite a bit.
See the gift. See the gift. See the perfection. Be aware. Move into gratitude. Know that the dance was not by chance. Rule of life, number 10, the dance is not by chance. And know that in this way your father loved you grandly indeed. For had you not agreed to come into each other's lives and play these roles, you would have moved into this the remainder of your life, wholly unequipped to be the grand and glorious, loving and outgoing person that you are. Or that you would choose to be. Therefore, don't feel the void, but rather the fullness of the gift. Love rarely shows up in exactly the form in which we would like to receive it, but it always shows up. And the beauty of love is that why it rarely shows up in exactly the form in which we would like to receive it, it always goes out in exactly the form we give it. And that's its glory and its beauty.